capital punishment is a topic that can generate some pretty strong emotions. And interestingly, religious people are on both sides of the argument. Some believe that capital punishment is just and appropriate. Others believe that it's barbaric. Today, we're going to dive into the arguments and also examine the issue from a biblical perspective. Now, I always feel a little trepidation covering a topic like this because it's impossible to do it justice in about 20 minutes of time. There are layers and nuances to the arguments on both sides of the issue that just can't be covered comprehensively in such a short amount of time. If this topic interests you, I strongly encourage you to dig into it further. Today, I'll just be addressing the most common arguments. And to learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. The United States is one of the few developed countries that still has capital punishment. At present, 27 states have the death penalty and 23 do not. 4 states have paused executions based on executive action. The momentum in the United States seems to be toward the abolition of capital punishment, since 1/3 of the states that have eliminated it have done so since 2007. Most countries in Europe have prohibited it, while it remains in force in some Asian, Middle Eastern, and African countries. Some countries still have the death penalty as the law, but have not executed anyone for several years. Some countries apply the death penalty for a variety of crimes, not just for murder. For example, drug trafficking warrants the death penalty in countries such as Singapore and Malaysia. Positions on capital punishment typically fall into 3 categories. Those who oppose the death penalty are known as abolitionists because they want to abolish capital punishment. They believe that the death penalty is never morally justifiable. Those who want to keep the death penalty are known as retentionists. They don't necessarily agree on the particular circumstances or on the specific arguments, but they believe that it is acceptable when it's implemented appropriately. There is a third position kind of between these two, and it's a procedural abolitionist. People in this category believe that capital punishment is acceptable in principle, but they believe that there are enough procedural problems in how the death penalty is administered that they only support it in very rare cases. At the root of the debate about capital punishment is a disagreement about the goal of the criminal justice system. Is it retribution, deterrence, or rehabilitation? Most people agree that there needs to be consequences for criminal behavior so that society doesn't plunge into chaos. And because of human nature, some kind of deterrent against crime is necessary. In the United States, there are some qualifications for capital punishment. The 8th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution protects individuals from cruel and unusual punishment. Specifically, it provides protection from the wanton and unnecessary infliction of pain. This is the reason why imprisonment is the principal form of criminal punishment administered in most of the Western world. In addition, the 8th Amendment protects a person from punishment that is out of proportion with the crime committed. Further, the Constitution protects individuals from punishment without due process of law. Historically, capital punishment has not been considered cruel and inhuman punishment because when the Bill of Rights was written in 1789, every state allowed the death penalty. The constitutionality of capital punishment was not substantially challenged until 1972, when the U.S. Supreme Court issued the first of 3 significant decisions concerning capital punishment. In the case Furman versus Georgia in 1972, the Supreme Court ruled that capital punishment as currently administered in the state of Georgia violated the Eighth Amendment against cruel and inhuman punishment. The second case was in 1976. In Gregg versus Georgia, the Supreme Court upheld a death sentence for murder, but made sure that juries had careful guidelines to follow in order to determine if the death sentence was the appropriate choice. A third case in 1987 was also from Georgia. In McCleskey versus Kemp, the court maintained that there was racial bias against African Americans in the death sentences. However, it was not enough to overturn the death sentence in that particular case. So let's take a few minutes to examine arguments on both sides of the issue. Those who are in favor of capital punishment believe it is appropriate in some circumstances. They rest their belief on four main arguments. First, capital punishment represents an appropriate demand for justice. The punishment must fit the crime. When a murder occurs, an innocent life is taken. The only punishment proportionate to the crime is the death penalty. Capital punishment is important for a society that depends on due process of law instead of vigilantism. Retentionists believe that there is nothing unjust about requiring a life for a life. The condemned murderer has forfeited his or her right to life by virtue of taking the life of another. Not requiring life for life as a general rule would involve a low view of the victim's life that has been needlessly taken. It seems unjust that the condemned murderer could continue with his or her life, albeit in prison, when the victim's life has been tragically and undeservedly ended. Even though some people will counter that vengeance belongs to God, the victim's family has personally experienced loss. So as long as they are seeking justice and not vengeance, their demand for capital punishment can be viewed as legitimate. A second argument in favor of capital punishment is that it deters crime. We see that societies that disrespect law and morality sink into more chaos. Capital punishment provides a unique deterrent against crime because the fear of death is a universal phenomenon. So the death penalty is unparalleled as a deterrent for people considering a capital crime. It won't deter all murderers, but it can deter some. Generally, the harsher the penalty, the greater the deterrent value. Abolitionists respond that a strong view of the sanctity of life is inconsistent with capital punishment. In fact, they wonder how someone could be against abortion but in favor of capital punishment. But being pro-life and supporting the death penalty are consistent because both positions encourage people to consider the consequence of taking the life of an innocent person. If society is serious about the sanctity of life, then it will mandate the strongest possible deterrent and the strongest possible consequence to keep people from taking innocent life. Denying the legitimacy of the death penalty cheapens life by discounting the life of the victim. Abolitionists will counter that capital punishment is not a good deterrent to murder. They point to the fact that the murder rate is lower in countries in Europe that have abolished the death penalty. So they argue that statistically, there is no relationship between capital punishment and the murder rate. Retentionists respond that the murder rate is complex and it is influenced by many factors such as socioeconomic status. So there isn't a one-to-one correlation between capital punishment and the murder rate. For the deterrent topic, I want to share something called the best bet argument, and it goes something like this. Assume that capital punishment is an effective deterrent. Then if a society has it, some murderers are put to death, and some innocent people are saved. But if the society does not have it, then society is in a worse position because murderers live and some innocent people are killed because the deterrence is not in effect. Conversely, let's assume that capital punishment is not an effective deterrent. Then if a society has it, it is worse off because some murderers are going to die and there was no deterrent value. If we assume that capital punishment doesn't work and a society doesn't have it, then there really is no effect because there's no additional risk to the innocent people. So to summarize the best bet argument, if we are unsure about the deterrent effect of capital punishment, it's actually better to bet that it does have such a value. If we bet on capital punishment and it works, then innocent people are saved. And if it works and a society doesn't have it, then innocent people will die needlessly. On the other hand, if it doesn't work as a deterrent, then whether or not we have it actually doesn't affect innocent lives. Retentionists argue that our obligation is to protect potential innocent victims, not convicted murderers. But the abolitionists would extend the best bet argument to include people who may be executed who were innocent. They believe that the possibility of executing an innocent person is high enough that society ought to bet against the death penalty. A third argument in favor of capital punishment is that society should not have to bear the cost of a life term. The cost of housing, feeding, providing security, and providing health care to an inmate, particularly as the inmate ages, could exceed $1 million. In some cases, the cost of the appeals may exceed the cost of maintaining the inmate over the course of his or her life. Of course, the debate over capital punishment involves much more than the bottom line financially. But the cost of capital punishment should be weighed against the cost of a life term in prison. Retentionists would argue that even if a life term costs less than capital punishment, the condemned murderer has forfeited his or her right to life and is therefore not entitled to lifetime room, board, and medical care at the expense of the public. A fourth argument is that capital punishment is not cruel and unusual punishment. The Eighth Amendment that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment is usually understood to refer to punishment that inflicts pain in a wanton and unnecessary manner, as well as punishment that is disproportionate to the crime committed. Critics argue that the death penalty is inherently cruel and unusual punishment. But retentionists argue that it can be administered without the wanton infliction of pain. In fact, it can be essentially painless, depending on how it's done. On the other side of this issue, abolitionists believe that capital punishment is not justifiable under any circumstances. They believe that no crime, however heinous, and no view of criminal punishment can be adequate grounds for a death sentence. A key argument that abolitionists present is that the death penalty undermines human dignity because it is cruel and unusual punishment. Capital punishment is associated with humanity's barbaric past, and Western civilization has evolved standards of decency and respect for human beings. Abolitionists believe that the death penalty sends a conflicting message about respect for human life. Yes, the murderer was wrong, but the state is committing another wrong by putting the criminal to death. And abolitionists don't want the state to have that power. Retentionists respond that the murderer has forfeited his or her right to life. But abolitionists believe that the right to life cannot be forfeited under any circumstances. They point to the Declaration of Independence, which states that all are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. However, retentionists argue that the founders clarified this notion in the 14th Amendment with the proviso that the rights to life, liberty, and property cannot be forfeited without due process of law. A second argument from abolitionists is that reform becomes impossible. Some criminals become rehabilitated during their time in prison. For Christians, this could give someone an opportunity to find faith in God and not only be a changed person in this life, but then also affect their eternal life. Many Christian groups believe that capital punishment prevents the possibility of criminals becoming reconciled to God. Retentionists argue that there are numerous opportunities for a criminal to be redeemed on death row, and their impending death could be an effective motivational factor to get right with God. Also, some retentionists argue that the primary goal of criminal justice is not reform, but retribution. A third argument from abolitionists is that death sentences usually have long and expensive appeals. Appeals are important to ensure that no mistakes are made, but the process normally takes 5 to 20 years and costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. There is a legal principle that death is different, so capital cases involve more lawyers, more witnesses, more motions, more post-sentencing appeals, etc. They argue that it would be simpler and more cost-effective to eliminate the death penalty in favor of life sentences without the possibility of parole. Retentionists counter that the cost of maintaining an inmate for a life term could be more expensive than an exhaustive appeals process. Unfortunately, the difficulty with this argument is that legal costs and housing costs can vary greatly by state, so both sides can point to data as evidence for their viewpoint related to the cost. A fourth argument is that the demand for justice, which abolitionists don't believe is true justice, is inconsistent with Jesus' ethic of forgiveness and redemption. They believe that society should hold people responsible for their crimes, but the death penalty is really about revenge and not justice. And putting someone to death can't bring the victim back to life. Some Christian abolitionists say that sincere vengeance belongs to the Lord, and it is not appropriate to get revenge through capital punishment. They point out that when Jesus quoted the Old Testament principle about eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, he left out the part about life for life. In response, retentionists argue that those people are confusing a personal ethic with a social ethic. They point to the establishment of a social principle of justice in Genesis chapter 9, verse 6, in which God told Noah, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man." Jesus' admonition to turn the other cheek is a personal ethic rather than a social ethic. There are two more common arguments against capital punishment, and these are ones usually supported not only by all abolitionists, but also by procedural abolitionists, people who in principle are in favor of capital punishment, but argue against it because of procedural issues. One of these arguments is that mistakes are inevitable and irreversible. Mistakes are possible and possibly even inevitable. This view is bolstered when people who were on death row get exonerated. Innocent people are sometimes wrongly convicted and incarcerated. In some cases, people have maintained their innocence all the way to execution. Now, I think some of them are lying or mentally ill, but it is possible that some were wrongly convicted. In some cases, convictions have been overturned. As of 2024, the Innocence Database maintained by the Death Penalty Information Center said that since 1973, 196 prisoners on death row had been exonerated. If the court makes a mistake in a non-capital case, the state can compensate the person who was wrongly convicted. But if the court makes a mistake in a death penalty case, then nothing can be done to remedy the situation. In some U.S. states, seeing death row inmates exonerated and released has brought about a moratorium on executions. Retentionists argue that the point of the long process of appeals is designed to ensure that mistakes are not made. And modern forensics, like DNA evidence, can now establish a certainty of guilt in many cases. So they argue that capital punishment shouldn't be eliminated in all cases. Another argument is that capital punishment is discriminatory. Abolitionists believe that the death penalty is not administered fairly because most convicted murderers who receive death sentences in the U.S. are minority men, particularly Black and Hispanic men of lower socioeconomic status. A counterargument is that minority men are more likely to be convicted of violent crimes, but the incidence of minority men receiving capital punishment is still disproportionately high, and it's unclear why. Is it an issue of race or gender or inadequate legal representation or geographic location, since some states and regions have a higher incidence of death sentences? Procedural abolitionists say that the system is unjust, so capital punishment has to be eliminated because it cannot be administered fairly. Retentionists usually acknowledge that the system does have shortcomings, but that the answer is not to get rid of capital punishment. Rather, it is to administer it more justly and even-handedly. From a biblical perspective, it may seem as if the Old Testament and the New Testament are in disagreement about this issue, and I've already touched on this a little bit. The Old Testament speaks of the principle of life for life, while the New Testament emphasizes Jesus' mercy. But are they really in disagreement? The problem with bringing Jesus' ethic of forgiveness into the issue of the death penalty is that it confuses personal and social ethics. The New Testament teachings on revenge and forgiveness are part of a personal ethic that forbids individuals from taking revenge and that requires forgiveness when wronged. But that ethic does not apply to the state. The responsibility of the state is to punish and to deter criminals, not to forgive them. God has given the state the responsibility of criminal punishment. The biblical emphasis on forgiveness and mercy is not relevant to the state's legitimate responsibility to punish criminals and to administer capital punishment. Genesis 9:6 occurs before the Mosaic Law was given, and it grounds capital punishment in the principle that human beings are created in the image of God. However, procedural elements such as the possibility of mistakes or the unjust administration of the death penalty are a legitimate cause for concern, regardless of how a person views the death penalty. There is room for legitimate debate over the procedural elements and over whether one should support capital punishment in the current legal and forensic context. The Bible seems to allow for the death penalty in principle, as long as the absolute certainty of guilt is established. Whether or not one believes in capital punishment, in these situations, we must not forget the victims, the victims' families, and even the criminals and the criminals' families, because ultimately, the action of the criminals caused life-shattering damage to many, many people. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.